Phil, there are so many great television shows and movies.
That's right. Thank goodness Resonance Rewind has the team to analyze them on a personal basis with Rebecca Bond, Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Alex Lefchook, and some key additional guests from the Temporal Nexus.
Aren't you one of those key additional guests?
No, I'm the Temporal Nexus.
Waste Allocation Load Lifter, Earth Class. Extraterrestrial Vegetation Evaluator. This, Hello Dolly, and put on your Sunday best. What's not to love? It's another Resonance Rewind.
Out there, there's a world outside of Yonkers. Way out there beyond this Hicktown, Barnaby. There's a slick town, Barnaby. Out there, full of shine and full of sparkle. Close your eyes and see it. Listen, Barnaby. Listen, Barnaby. Put on your Sunday clothes. There's lots of world out there. Get out the brilliantine and dime cigars. We're gonna find adventure in the evening air. Girls in white in a perfume night with the lights as bright as the stars. Put on your Sunday clothes, we're gonna ride through town in one of those new horse-drawn open cars. We'll see the shows at Delmonico's and we'll close the town in a whirl.
A blatant example of pro-environmentalist propaganda, a cruel condemnation of obese people, or is it a simple little love story with stellar animation and sound design? Is it any of these things? Is it all of them? Well, we'll work our way through that over the next hour or so in terms of Resonance Rewind, which has a fabulous team and a new feature. We're calling it Aspects of Resonance Rewind that inspire a Pamela Sue Mann tune. Pamela, welcome back to Resonance Rewind. This is something which we're going to be focusing on, and we're going to be asking for your thoughts on, of course, this little man, or indeed robot. There I go, humanizing him, War-E. We've also got, of course, Jenny Bill with us from the joys of Newcastle. That's England, as opposed to Australia. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
And, of course, we've got Robin Pierce, who's all set and ready to deliver the tale of this fine little robot. And 700 years after humanity has left to simply become a mouth and a thumb somewhere in outer space.
I am indeed. But first of all, I'd like to expand on your idea, Alex. And I'd like to propose that sometime in the future, we do one of the Christopher Lee Fu Manchu movies so we can have Fu Manchu with a Sue Mann tune.
I couldn't possibly comment on that, Robin, but carry on. Provide okay. Us with the crazy.
WALL-E is at its heart a science fiction dystopian cautionary tale that is both a warning and a display of optimism. In the future, humankind has abandoned Earth, which is basically one planetary garbage heap incapable of sustaining life. Alone on the planet, more or less, is a trash compactor robot who was left behind. He's still carrying out his duties of rubbish collection, accompanied by his only friend and companion, a cockroach. But the robot, designated WALL-E, has developed a glitch in that he now has a personality. When a probe robot, designated Eve, arrives, she discovers that WALL-E has found life, a small plant, and takes it back to the Ark-like spaceship where the humans now live. But WALL-E stows away, having developed a crush on Eve. Now, the humans have become obese, hoverchair-bound, atrophied slobs who can only focus on the screens in front of them and what they are displaying. They don't actually do anything, nor take any notice of anything that's happening around them. Now, on the ship, which is celebrating the 700th anniversary of their five-year cruise, forces are at work to destroy the plant and prevent mankind's return home. What's going to happen? Let's get discussing.
Very much so. It's been seen in so many ways that it's a movie that kind of, even though it's now, what, 2008? So it's 13, 14 years old since Andrew Stanton first actually put this thing together. It took 4 years in the making. And of course, it features the voice talents of Sigourney Weaver as the voice of the ship. Pamela, what did you make when you saw WALL-E first time around?
First time around, the first thing two things I remember loving. I don't know, that's an interesting word to choose, was how strong and correct and accurate of a social commentary it was. And I had spent quite a few years on the fringe, just reading, purposefully not paying attention to the main and what was in the world. When the movie came out, it was, you know, this is where we are, this is where we're headed. I mean, and I thought it at the time, so it's 2008, which is and isn't that long ago, it seemed a very bold statement in that way. You know, when you saw everybody who, you know, who was just, they were basically blubberballs, you know, being driven around. And I didn't feel like it was cruel or anti-obesity. I felt like it was a straight up commentary on our society, especially in America. And of course, Andrew Stanton hails from my Massachusetts, so kudos to Andrew for doing it. And also the second thing I was struck by was, of course, the song at the end by Peter Gabriel, which is such a great song, and the animation just made it adorable. I thought it just brilliant, one of the best movies that I have ever seen in my lifetime.
I mean, I've got to go along with the range of things you're talking about there in terms of, it's more than a simple love story. I mean, you draw on so many elements here. As the robot that we anthropomorphize, that actually gains sentience, that is sentient, actually goes through that being. I've got to admit that every time I see this, and I've seen it probably a dozen times now, it does make me cry. It literally does make me cry and sort of shed tears, because there are so many elements there that kind of relate to the human experience. Even if you have no interest in the kind of biblical allegories, the notion of the ark, the sort of balance of the sort of the return to the planet Earth, etc., there really also isn't technically a villain in the piece. It's all a case of people essentially trying to do their key things. Indeed, autopilot or auto, arguably all he's doing is basically sticking to his programming. That's all. That's his key line. Let's turn to Jenny. Jenny, your thoughts on this WALL-E extravaganza?
I'd never seen it before. I'd never even really heard of it before, because this sort of thing is not really my kind of thing. And I loved the first half an hour, and I was like you, I was crying, and I thought the music was just beautiful. I thought the look of it was absolutely beautiful. And then when they got to that other spaceship, I actually just really kind of, I just thought it was, I lost interest. I mean, I understand the whole thing that it's saying, but I just kind of found it got all a little bit more cartoony. I don't quite know how to describe it. It was less emotional. And then when it got to like the last 20 minutes, I suddenly found that it seemed to change around again. And I was like all emotional, and at the end I was crying, and you know, and the music was just adorable. And I think the first half an hour I loved the way it was, I mean, you can't say filmed, because obviously it's not filmed, but the way that it was done, where they showed the long views and the sunsets and the interior of where WALL-E lived as well, the way it was done. And I loved all the little noises that he made, and the clicks, and the little thing. I wasn't sure if it was a real cockroach or whether this was also some sort of animated thing as well, but yeah, so I really enjoyed it, but I didn't really enjoy the part when it was up on the ship. Some of it I felt got a little bit kind of silly.
Well, even with respect to Mo, the cleaning robot, foreign contaminants detected, genius. Surely it kind of echoes Graham Harper's line in Gadget for Waters of Mars. Let's turn back to Pamela briefly, because you've submitted this tune we're going to hear now called Break, which again is quality stuff. You mentioned obviously the soundtrack of WALL-E. It brings in Peter Gabriel, it brings in Michael Crawford, it brings in that insufferably catchy tune that we started off with, of course, from Hello Dolly, which is Put On Your Sunday Best. Would you like to share with us why you felt that Break was something which was particularly poignant and maybe can connect with this movie?
Absolutely. Break is post-apocalyptic, you know, and it's the sign of, you know, the crack where the light gets in. You know, obviously society is beyond broken, and yet there's this little sign of life, and there's this hopeful protagonist and hero and who you know is ever so cheerful and hopeful. And I think it's sort of desperately hopeful and excited about his little gadgets and the life that he lives. And I think Break is a bit like that too, in a sense that it's breaking with the old ways philosophically and entering into the new, the unknown, break a new day. And it just seems like, wow, that it's so, to me at least, because I wrote the song and I know what it's about, there's such a parallel to the journey that WALL-E goes through and the song. And then it's got that little sort of broken drum thing in the middle, which is very robotic. Yeah. After the dream. Breaks the heart after the fall. It mesmerized. That's just the start. Thank you.
day.
Pamela Sue Mann and Broke there, or Break, I should say, because it wasn't broke. So it's let's not fix it. Let's carry on with the whole thing. You're listening to Resonance Rewind. And Robin, we're back with yourself now. It's interesting that when listening to the Andrew Stanton DVD companion track, he basically says that he ensured that the whole animation team would watch Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton films, and even some Harold Lloyd, on a day-by-day basis, and arguably Wall-E owes more to Charlie Chaplin's Little Tramp than it does to 2001 A Space Odyssey, although I do think that there are a number of key things there. I think Auto very much signifies the whole notion of the HAL 9000, and even you have that line with the little plants, the green plants in the boot, suggesting that humanity is actually being rebooted to actually sort of move its way forward, which I haven't actually seen discussed from that point of view. But from your own perspective, you're a keen Pixar fan. I know you were a massive follower of obviously what we saw over Christmas Soul, and indeed recent released packages, etc. How have you kind of connected? I mean, do you still connect with this, or are you sort of a hard-bitten cynic who says all about love, Wall-E as a kind of Christ-like figure, going through his own sort of agonies to actually sort of express himself, etc.? What's going on?
Well, of course, you've got the biblical significance of the female being called Eve. First of all, I refute and reject anybody who tells me that this is a condemnation of obesity. From the opening shot, where we see what we have done to Earth, to the way that we have de-evolved into fat, lazy slobs who cannot tear ourselves away from a screen, even to eat, and we want everything handed to us. I see this as an entirely logical extrapolation of where we are today. This could actually happen. We are over trashing our own planet. We are basically doing the great thing that no people tell you not to do. We are defecating where we eat. As far as you know, humanity and it being a humanist story is concerned, the human condition, which you mentioned, I'm with you all the way, and I will present the unpopular notion, no doubt, that this film successfully does far better a commentary on humanity, where we are, where we're headed, than Gene Roddenberry managed last week on the Questor tapes. And he does it without preaching, without being a sanctimonious blowhard, but tells us in a way that we can digest. There is much food for thought here. You mentioned the necessity of watching Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. Now, I am a big fan of silent movies. I particularly, of course, go for silent horror movies. Lon Chaney, for example, I have a collection of them. And it shows. It absolutely shows, because for the first 50 minutes of this film, not one word of dialogue is uttered. It is all gesture, expression, and mime. And without saying a word, and let's face it, they did it again. Pixar did it again with Up. They tell, in a very short time, with no dialogue, a far better love story than the likes of Twilight, for example, managed in four entire films.
Okay, some interesting.
This is how you tell an optimistic dystopian story, textbook.
let's move on to the line that I've considered in terms of the biblical metaphors, that we actually have wonderful sort of exercises in terms of love conquers all and addresses that. But let's move to somebody who was actually, I think if memory serves, probably about seven when this first movie broke from that point of view. So she might have gone through the process. Maybe she didn't actually shed tears as I did when I saw it in the cinema and indeed continue to do so. But what are your thoughts, Jessica Burtis?
I actually agree with that. The first time I saw WALL-E, it made me like so sad. And I don't tend to watch this movie very much because even as wonderful as it is, it always makes me emotional. But yeah, WALL-E, I cannot say how beautiful of a story this is. Everything about it is just so wondrous and lovely. And I agree with Robin how he was saying that, you know, for the first part of it, there's no words or anything like that. It's all just this like, you have to kind of understand what's happening, but you do, like you just naturally understand it. And I think something that's so beautiful about it is like WALL-E is such, he has such a childlike wonder with everything. And there isn't a simple thing that he sees that doesn't bring him joy and make him hopeful and happy. And I think that that's such an interesting thing to see in this dystopian environment. You see this little robot rolling around in trash who just is so happy to find like a Rubik's Cube or a spork or something like that. And I think like, you know, if we're reading into it from like a biblical perspective type of criticism, how the love that WALL-E and Eve share is something that's so pure and just like selfless and loving, and there's no maliciousness or anything like that. Like they just kind of have this, you know, human-like wonder with each other, even though they're robots. And it's so beautiful. Like, and also I've never seen a cuter cockroach than WALL-E's little pet. He's so cute. I love him. But yeah, my parents were watching this with me and it's just like, we were like, oh, he's so cute. Look at this like robot. Oh, I love everything about this film.
As Andrew Stanton said, big challenge, how do you make a cockroach cute? It's also been argued that, again, he's Christ-like love personified or robotified. He's patient, he's kind, he's no one to be jealous of, and the closest he comes to bragging is when he holds up a loosely held together block of trash to show Eve his directive. And there is that directive, there is that shift. I mean, we see, obviously, the Peter Gabriel-esque line that Santos also said he took from a Peter Gabriel concert in the 1980s, where you have half of the stage in a square block shape to signify the male and the other in a round form to signify the female. And I think you've got that sort of echoed within the characters of Eva and WALL-E within the whole field. Robin, does this mean that you've actually managed to look at Hello, Dolly as well and seen that whole film in its entirety with Barbara Streisand as the matchmaker and Michael Crawford, obviously, is one of the key characters in Hello, Dolly, which obviously leads to Only a Moment and, of course, WALL-E's favourite way of gaining sentience?
That is an interesting question, and I can confirm to you that I have not watched a single frame of Hello, Dolly, other than what's in the film. And I've heard no songs other than what's on the soundtrack CD.
I would certainly hope that you've somehow encaptured Louis Armstrong's Hello, Dolly, because that is a classic, as I'm sure you'd actually are, even if it's the title song from the musical.
I am aware of Hello, Dolly by Louis Armstrong, yes. Barbra Streisand, not so much.
Pamela, from your own point of view in the music, I mean, we've got obviously Thomas Mann here, or Thomas Newman, I should say. You've got the classics that have been sort of woven into the soundtrack. Did you feel that actually worked well? Did you feel it kind of managed to also share the and heighten the emotion of things that we feel as we go through this journey, this odyssey?
I believe that it was perfectly executed. I'm a little bit with Jenny on the moment where it becomes very sort of cartoony and sweet, but more for the kids in a way. That stuff was a little bleepy and bloopy and kind of took you to another place, which I'm sure the kids absolutely loved. But other than that, I feel like the music was perfectly interwoven. You noticed and you didn't notice. And there's so much reference of growing up in America and looking back at our not terribly long, but very rich history of music and film. And there's so much reference and homage in the film, visually and musically, to what came before us, the greats, the classics, and even the slower way in which the movie sort of develops is again an homage to the way that, that film used to tell stories. It wasn't all so frantic and fast and overblowing your senses. It was really beautifully artistically done, musically, and you know, the music just, I feel like the music fits the film like a glove.
Stanton, obviously at this point in time, it was long before Disney actually decided to purchase Pixar. It was still actually working within that. You do have critiques of the corporation, B&L, by and large, the whole aspect that comes through there, the character Fred Willard's that very much pushes the whole notion of where things are looking to go. And yet you still have the line that if we just look at Wall-E, every character that he actually encounters in the movie seems to be woken up by Wall-E, not in a kind of woke sense, but every time Wall-E bumps into other people, other robots, he shakes them from their routines. He arguably shows them a better way to live. He actually taught, you know, we talk, quote unquote, about life and the whole notion of actually working through that and not going through it in an unconscious, self-absorbed, lazy way. Be the, do the good work and work through that process. Jenny, your father's a member of the cloth, a member of the cloth, a vicar and so on. Has he ever considered using Wall-E in one of his sermons?
I suspect he's probably never heard of Wally, actually, if I'm perfectly honest. But I would agree with what you were saying, that I feel like for me, the opening, because when it was on at the beginning, I was thinking, oh, my goodness, I absolutely love this. It's like a work of art. The music was almost like it was portraying the emotions of the robots, and I found it terribly moving. And I also felt, as I say, I it fitted in beautifully with the way that the scenery was and the views that you had of the desolation of the earth. And then I really like the ending as well, when he goes, Eve, and he just kind of like he had been awaking everybody else up, and then she does it to him at the end. And I thought it was lovely. But there, as I say, it was just a little bit in between that I felt kind of went a little bit more less emotional, but it was also nice to have a shift in the film as well, rather than keep the same sort of theme throughout it.
It would probably be seen as the ideal pandemic movie. I certainly rewatched it again at the start of the pandemic last year, and I think that sense of human touch that you actually get, or indeed just that reaching out, is important. Of course, the name of the starship that's actually there is the Axiom, a postulate or assumption that's taken to be true to serve as a premise that we actually build on. We talk about axiomatic in mathematics being a key way within that whole field. It's not preaching. I mean, Robin, you made this point that unlike what you felt was more heavy-handed preaching in previous work, and certainly the one we considered last week with the Questor tapes, that what we've got with respect to Wall-E is implicit rather than explicit. You're not basically being hammered over the head with this whole thing, that whole notion of what Andrew Stanton's putting together and the rest of the team, because obviously he did work collaboratively with respect to this, is to ensure that the core values of loving the world, serving the world, etc., are implied rather than explicitly hammered across to the viewer.
Well, that is absolutely correct. It could be another Christ-like metaphor, I suppose, but you've mentioned how Wall-E encounters other beings, other robots, and of course people, and how he touches them and maybe teaches them another way. Now, what we can't forget is Wall-E has been alone on this planet, and he is basically an outsider, a misfit, one who doesn't know or doesn't adhere to, you know, the wisdom of the day, where you just sit back and take what's given to you and watch what's on your screen. You're oblivious to everything. And basically, isn't that what Jesus Christ did?
Ha ha. magic spell. You kiss, this is Lavinia Rose. When you kiss me, heaven sighs, and though I close my eyes, I see Lavinia Rose. When you press me to your heart, and in a world apart, a world where roses bloom. And when you speak, angels sing from above. Everyday void seems to turn into love song. Give your heart and soul to me, and life will always bleed. Lavinia Rose.
You know, there is that kind of level. But I think the other thing that I really love about this, and we've mentioned the music of Thomas Newman, who has composed some really evocative scores. I mean, among them, American Beauty, which is another absolute classic. We stop in this. We stop and we take a look at the beauty all around us. I mean, yes, there's some comical pantomime when Wally is out in space using a fire extinguisher as a means of jet propulsion to try and maneuver himself around. But look at the beauty of that scene. It is, and I'm going to make myself really unpopular with the sci-fi fans here, that is a better space ballet sequence than Kubrick did with the Blue Danube in 2001 A Space Odyssey as the Pan Am Space Clipper approaches the wheel. It's more evocative. It's stunning in its beauty. It is the perfect fusion of visuals and audio. You learn something, you're entertained, you are touched. This is, by all of my personal standards, a perfect, flawless film. This cannot be made any better.
And indeed, lots of rewrites and things went into the four-year gestation period that the series took. You mentioned, of course, Kubrick there. Apparently, test audiences, when they were first screened the movie, actually got up and cheered when we have those opening notes of Also Sprach Zarathustra and the of the first steps, the toddler's steps that humanity take to actually take those steps forward.
Again,
to actually
baby steps back to being proper, functional human beings. Mm.
Jessica, let's turn to characters. I mean, clearly, you've got Momo, you've got the captain, of course, who manages to find his whole system in place there. You've got the ship's computer, you've got Eva. You've got, of course, the cute cockroach, who, again, I think had a kind of element of Jiminy Cricket after a fashion coming into it as well. So maybe there were elements of that too. Plus, of course, how can you also make a pair of binoculars human? Is it just a case of us human beings, we will see faces where we wish to see them and so on and make the patterns out of them because that's the way our minds are hardwired to do so. But from your own point of view, Jessica, which particular character stood out?
I think obviously Wally, he is the most endearing character. I don't think you can dislike him. He has he is very childlike. Like, he just sees the world in such an innocent, pure way that is just, even though he's alone, you know, you see him like driving through like the dead Wallys that are shut down and not coming back to life, but he is so alive. And I think that's so impressive that they brought out so much humanity through this little trash robot, and that he was kind of the one that kept going and didn't stop. And there's that message of perseverance, like he somehow kept living when all the others were dead and asleep. And like you were saying, maybe that's related to how he would wake up all the other creatures. He was the only one that was awake of his kind. And I think that's really beautiful. But my brother loves the cleaning robot. He loves the cleaning robot. But I do
agree. Contaminant.
Yes. But I do agree with what you're saying, where like humans, we like to see, with like the binoculars that Wally has, we like to see things where, you know, there might not be, like when you're a kid and you can like start to get attachment to stuffed animals or to random objects that, you know, adults maybe don't understand, but to you that's like alive and you have conversations with it or things like that. And it's just a very, like, I don't know, it's a very, not infantile, but yeah, Jesse, everything. Yeah, like Toy Story, we love to see, you know, objects being brought to life. And I think that's very interesting to kind of look at.
Jenny, thoughts from yourself, characters?
Yeah, I'd have to go for Wally as well. I actually, the kind of, there was something about him and the noises that he made that reminded me a little bit of E.T. I don't know if you know what I mean. The same kind of, the sort of innocence in this strange world and the little kind of noises that he made as well. But yes, I mean, they managed to make it with the music and the cinematography. They managed to bring this thing to life.
and of course, you mentioned E.T. there, and Spielberg also quite explicitly, implicitly, if that's not an axiomatic contradiction, but he does imply the Christ metaphor with the heart and E.T. phone home and all the sort of elements which come across within that whole field. Robin, from your own point of view, which ones are you going to go for? Is it going to be the captain?
Good grief, no. Much as I loved Wally for his sheer humanity, I think my favourite character, in the same vein that I really liked Uncle Ugo, I think my favorite character has to be the cleaning droid, just for his sheer levels of frustration. I mean, that, and when you think about it, before the Star Wars sequels were made and kicked off with The Force Awakens, we had in Wall-E a little droid that moved around on a single wheel. So, you know, it kind of foresaw that. But it definitely, yeah, for me, it was a little cleaning droid. He reminded me a bit of Mr. Angry from Inside Out.
And, of course, Ben Burtt also voices M.O., the microbe obliterator, to be full in terms of what M.O. is meant for. He also, of course, voiced Wally. So Ben Burtt, obviously, a win-win situation from that point of view. Pamela.
Well, I was just thinking of the interplay, and I was actually sort of drawing a triangle between the captain and Eva and Wally, and then there was the couple as well, and there was this awakening that happened. So I think it's sort of the way they all work off of each other. You know, I mean, I'd love to say Eva, just because she represents so much of the feminine, and she goes through a transformation and she awakens and really starts out in the movie just, you know, just like non-human, and then something happens with Wally, and she cares for another, I guess I'm saying Eva, though I didn't plan to, but I think it's wonderful how she wakes up and she learns to care, and then when it seems that Wally is dead or it rebooted and doesn't remember anything, you see how she really just is so brokenhearted and does everything she can to resurrect him, and it's so beautiful. She definitely does bring that sort of, you know, feminine energy, and is a perfect compliment. I mean, of course, we all love Wally, you know, and Wally is just, he's so endearing. He's so charming. I think we would all have a Wally friend if we could, make it possible in our homes. But yeah, I'm going to root for the girls. I'm going to say Eva.
And Eva, of course, you mentioned, goes through that whole journey of discovery where her directive effectively changes, because her directive, which was to seek out planetary forms of life to check that actually Earth was actually going to be inhabitable, the name extraterrestrial vegetation evaluation. That's the EVA in EVA. And so, you know, that changes because she realizes after initially blaming Wally for thinking that he's completely screwed up her whole directive, mission, etc. She goes through that whole range of things, including, of course, the sequence where effectively she shuts down. And I think that's one of the other very charming aspects of the movie where Wally doesn't realize what's happening, but still actually maintains faith that things will actually work out, which again, that was, you know, it worked well. As I say, it does make me cry every time I actually see it, and it's it's there, but it is just an interesting side of things. Okay, well, scores. Let's start off with Jessica.
I would give this 100 out of 10 if I could. Everything about it is beautiful, just genuinely, and I think part of it that I really love is like the symbolism, like how we have, like the part that I really love too is this scene where we have the mothership nestled in this like nebula, like this like cradle of planets and stars with this ship right next to it and with like humanity. And yeah, oh my goodness, like 100 out of 10, 10 out of 10, everything, yes, full stars.
Yeah, and again, the notion of Christ-like love, an act of self-sacrifice rather than just a good feeling. It's kind of love you see acted out again and again, that agape notion that Paul Tarsus would actually say that sort of connects us as human beings and so on. Even with the space area that you weren't impressed with, Jenny, what are your points going to be for this?
Well, I'd really like to give the beginning and the first half an hour and the end, I'm going to give 10 out of 10, but I'm going to give the whole movie 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Pamela.
I'm going to give the movie a 10 because I also know, not really being directly involved, but in, you know, 6 degrees of separation involvement and in films and the process that the filmmaker, the director, the writer has to go through with the committee, the entire committee. And actually I've had my daughter in films that you know, either her scenes were cut or the pilot wasn't picked up. And I know that from the inception of something to the point where it actually comes out into theaters. And as you say, with test audience, you have to please so many people. The committee is huge, you know, it's a huge committee for a movie of that budget. So to come through all of that, and I'm sure a lot of concessions were made, and that's probably part of the reason why they went through that very cartoony part in the middle to make everyone happy. So to get through all of that and get to the point where the movie gets released and is so beloved, and to keep its integrity and keep what it is without making too many concessions and getting rid of things that might piss people off, you know, yeah, I give it a 10.
And of course, Andrew Stanton's also said that, yeah, one of the pleasures of working with Pixar was that he was given time to allow things to develop and work through that process. Jessica, you just briefly added a very important aspect of that. Yes, you do. In fact, we have to mention the classic of all Pixar's A113, of course, which was the room in California School of Art that many Pixar alumni actually all studied in, makes its appearance with respect to the directive A113. You get the dinosaur from Toy Story. You get all sorts of other areas within that. So lots of Easter eggs to actually sort of, again, repay repeated viewings. Robin, I suspect it's going to be a straight 10 for yourself, or are you going to shock us?
Well, I am known on this show for being a little bit more reserved in my marks, and I do actually put a lot of thought into it. There's a lot of criteria, especially with animated films. And on this one, the biggest criteria is, did I ever, at any point in watching the film, forget that I was watching an animated movie? And yes, I did. And it happened in frame number one. So this I consider to be a flawless, perfect film. It gets a 10, a rare 10, and it really deserves it.
There we have it. The end of our views.
What about you?
Oh, where's it's a 10. It's a 10. I think it has to be a 10 because it does work. And it's probably my favourite of all the Pixar entries, although there's a pretty strong crowd there. I mean, Inside Out comes fairly close to it. Next week, we're back with the world of Irwin Allen as we go to Pearl Harbor and we see what actually happens when the sky fell in, on the day the sky fell in, and we deal with that vexing time travel question. what would you say to your father if you knew he was going to die, but you could possibly save him? It's all in the time tunnel next week on Resonance Rewind. Keep on resonating.
The light.